Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, let's go.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is...
What?
My name is...
Dr. Drake.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Sir.
Let's go.
That's how we roll.
Yeah, man.
Come with it.
What we do?
Let's go.
Talking sports with the 12th man official kicking off on this Wednesday, April the 11th. And, of course, we're having a good time. You know, we just made it in the playoffs. We're feeling lucky. You know what I'm saying? OT, that's what we do.
Talking what you sports. Talking about, man? We've
never won. Oh, man. We're number one. We're close to the draft pick. We're the one seed.
We're the one seed.
That's what happens. I love it, man. Of course, we're talking sports, both men. Hey, let's check in with fellas. Mr. JQ, how you feeling today, sir? You all right, man?
Oh, man, I'm good. I had to take me a nap because y'all going to have to send me some good wishes and some B12 energy shots. I got, like, 9 Stripers games, 2 Gladiator games, and 2 United 2 games over the course of 14 days.
Wow. All right.
Calling you to iron, man.
Yeah, but listen, we gotta adjust the show. If we gotta adjust the show, just let us know too, man, because I definitely get that schedule, man. So I know exactly what you're dealing with, man. But if we gotta adjust the show, give me a heads up. And I'm in Buford, man, so maybe I got a chance to hook up. We'll connect, bro. We gotta talk about that. So I may be in the area, man, to catch a game or something like that.
Okay.
So we'll have to talk. Anyway, Rob Ford, how you feeling today, Rob? You doing all right, bro?
Man, doing dynamic. Ready to make it do what it do, baby.
Doing dynamic.
Wow. Okay. All right, Rob. Okay. I like it. Hey, you know, so we're all trying to be like Rob. He didn't tell us what he ate today, but that's okay. You know, we'll keep this going here, man, since, you know, he's been flat for the past couple weeks.
I'm trying to lose a few LBs, so I'm keeping it simple with some simple salads.
Uh-oh.
Boring food.
Oh, man. We are ready to talk to sports. Hey, America, we got a dynamic show in store for you, trying to take that word like Rob said. And so call into the show. The number to call in is always at 424-243-9519. A little disclaimer, though, if you talk junk, JQ will be on you, and we'll cut you off just like that, man. The trigger has no heart, like they used to say. And then
there you go. There it is. The
MCA. That's right. MCA. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12, THMA in sports. And go to Facebook as well, facebook.com/talkingsports, the 12th man and 12th man sports. We are on that as well. So follow your boys. We post a lot of stuff. Mock draft. Got a lot of things to talk about. But we're right into the NBA season, getting that wrapped up. Dynamic games. And let's kick it off with the Nuggets and the Warriors update. We were talking about that before the show. So, Rob, you know, I don't know if you want to talk about that, JQ, because, you know, obviously we watched that too. So, talk about that quick update about the score and everything like that, and I'll kick it over to Rob.
Oh, yeah, man, it was a fantastic game. Went into overtime. I believe I walked away the last piece of it, but it was a 6-point victory. I believe it was somewhere in there for the T-Wolves finally getting into the playoffs. I think after, 13, 14 years since KG was there.
KG.
Yeah. You know, and congratulations, you get the number one seed, Houston Rockets. But it was a fantastic game. Denver, very much a young team on the come up. To me, they surprised to even be battling into game 82 to make the playoffs this year. I figured they may be another year away. But, you know, shout out to Denver for accelerating their growth. And Minnesota, this is what you traded for Jimmy Butler for, right? You put in with Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, and you signed Jeff Teague. And, you know,
yep.
Thibodeau's playing them boys 40 minutes a game. You know he's going to do that from the Chicago days.
Oh.
But a fantastic game all around. I just wish they would stop forgetting that they have Carl Anthony Towns on their team. and kind of run that offense through him. But outside of that, man, you know, it was a fantastic game. I mean, the NBA can't be any happier than it was right now to have that kind of atmosphere for a playoff game in Game 82.
Why did I think of little Micah Machado? I can't forget, not in love anymore. That's what I thought, man.
Wow.
Rob, man, what do you think about that, man? What do you think about the update, bro? That's the first thing came to my mind, too.
Well,
Rob.
Tell you what, you couldn't ask for a better way. Some of these matchups fell into place for the NBA for the Western Conference playoff seeding. We have the Nuggets and the Timberwolves, the Jazz and the Blazers are battling it out for the number three seed and for the Northwest Division title as we speak. And then, as we talked about, the Nuggets and the T-Wolves battling for the eighth spot to get into the final spot in the playoffs. You had the Pelicans and the Spurs going at it, the battling for the number five spot. So there, you couldn't ask for a better way for some of these matchups to fall into the place for the NBA tonight. But the T-Wolves, the thing we got to think about with this team here, before Jimmy Butler got hurt, the Timberwolves were number four seed in the Western Conference with some space, too. And so now they're just getting Jimmy Butler back. Could be a scary out. I still like Houston to beat them in the playoffs, though. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if T-Wolves, you know, managed to pull a game or two out of it in that series. I mean, like I said, they were the number four seed before the Butler went out. And you got Butler, you got Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Jeff Teague. So there's a lot of talent on that basketball team, albeit young. But it should be an interesting team to watch in the playoffs. Probably a fun team to watch, too, going forward. But a good win, claiming that spot, 31 points from Butler, 26 from Towns. Now you get the Houston Rockets.
Surprise.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
Play the Houston Rockets.
Yeah. And even the Rockets, you know, James Harden, I know we're going to talk about him too as far as MVP and things of that nature. But you got to think about this. Harden hasn't done anything in the NBA playoffs. Chris Paul hasn't done anything in the NBA playoffs. Mike D'Antoni hasn't done anything in the NBA playoffs. So we talk about the Raptors, and they haven't succeeded in the playoffs. Now, let's see what the Rockets are going to do come playoff time.
Yeah, you know,
send
I'm all
your
with that
emails
right
to Rob Ford at 12
Minutes Plus. No, I'm on that train. We talked about that last week. I was going to say, if I can't give Toronto the benefit of the doubt, you know, they had a great season and got the one seed. What Rob just said, you got to have the same kind of, you know, kind of, not eye roll, but just a little bit of a, when you go, you know, projecting Houston so far. And that's a serious matchup. Can Capella slow down Carl Anthony Towns? You know what I mean? And what can Jimmy Butler do? Will they put him on Harden to try to slow him down? I mean, it's interesting. I still think Houston survives, but I agree with you, Rob. I see Minnesota still in a game or two. In the other games, you might get one Houston blowout, but I think most of those games are going to be really competitive.
Hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah,
I totally
agree with that assessment. Should be interesting and fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know we'll definitely dive into some more of the playoff talk too as well. And you know, you got to give a lot of props to Denver, like we talked about JQ and the Nuggets, because last year, you know, after losing, you know, Gordon Hayward, you know, you're trying to figure out, hey, you know, what was going to happen with them, but they literally just stepped up their game.
I mean, Utah lost Gordon Hayward.
I apologize.
Both those cities
we'll
in the mountains.
Right.
It's easy to get them confused.
Yeah. I'll see. All right. We'll get back to that. Man, okay. Let's talk about the Warriors. The 40-point, I'm going to catch up with that, too. See if I can edit that out. Hey, let's talk about the Warriors 40-point loss to the Jazz. That's what I was looking at the Jazz, and I was thinking about, like, what happened, and I don't know. I was trying to associate a couple things, too. But,
you're trying to cover it up.
Anyway. I'm trying. So you know, with the Warriors here, hey, I don't need this right now. With the Warriors, they're just getting prepped. You know, they probably were thinking about the playoffs, and they didn't really care about that game. You know, so that's what I'm gonna say about that. That 40-point loss to the Jazz, Rob.
Well, I think if you're the Warriors, you gotta have some serious concerns right now. It works that they're going to play the Spurs in the first round, a team that also kind of beat up and don't have their best player in Kawhi Leonard, too, is going to work there. I think they got the matchup that they need to really not have any troubles in the first round. But you look at the way the Warriors have played in these last five games. I don't think, you know, you can call it cruising, but I think there's some serious concerns on the defensive end the way they're playing. And, I mean, I know they didn't have Steph Curry, but they still had Kevin Durant. They still had Draymond Green. They still had Klay Thompson in that game. And I know you don't have Iguodala, but, man, to get trucked the way they did by the Utah Jazz, you look at the last five games, the only game they won was against Phoenix. I mean, and, you know, Phoenix is a G League team right now. I mean, so I mean, everybody should be beating them. But, I mean, you 1-4 in your last five games going into the playoffs. Like I said, I think it helps that they're going to get the Spurs in the first round. And so I think they'll get by in time for them to get Steph Curry healthy going forward. But I still think you got to have some concerns going forward if you're the Warriors.
So, to quote Aaron Rodgers, you got to R-E-L-A-X. You got to relax. I hear what you're saying. But the way I would describe what they've been playing is disinterested. They were locked into the TC for so long. They were just trying to get healthy. They know that Steph is going to probably be back in the second round. You're right. They got a fantastic matchup in a Kawhi-less San Antonio team. They can win that series 4-0 or 4-1 and get themselves, you know, depending on what happens in the other matchup on their side of the bracket, get themselves a good 4 to 6 days off in between, and that's more time for Steph to get healthy. So they've built up enough cachet for me that I'm not going to worry about it too much. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but when you're locked into the two seed, you've been to, what, three straight NBA finals, you won two of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you get to a point sometimes where you're just like, okay, we're judged on what happens in the postseason. We're locked into this two seed. You know, we can just they feel like they can turn that switch on. And maybe they can and maybe they can't, but, you know, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt based on their track record. The same way that we can't do it for Toronto and for Houston, I can do that for Golden State for what they've shown me. So, you know, unless it gets to a 2-2 in that Spurs series and you're like, uh-oh, you know, then I'll worry. But on paper, I still feel like that's a 4-0, 4-1 Golden State first round. If you get Steph back and he's got a little bit of his legs, then, you know, they get back more on track.
Yeah, they got the right matchup, and I think that's what's going to help them. But I think if they didn't get the right matchup, I think there'll be some serious cause for concern. I really do.
Yeah. They ain't worried about it. I think this interest is. But I think I agree with you, Jake. Definitely, yeah, whatever, you know, we're going to turn it on. But like I said, that could be dangerous, as Rob said, if they get too relaxed. But right now, you got to focus in. Now it's playoffs, so, you know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, but you've never seen the Warriors team fall like this in the last 3 to 4 years going into the playoffs.
You haven't, but also in those last couple of years, they hadn't played, you know, 100 games. You know, in the year. Now they've done that three straight years, and then you had the injuries this year. That's why I just say I hear what you're saying, but I just feel like with them, you know, it's they have that ability to turn it on. They know what it takes to win. They've done it. So I'm not going to worry about them too much. Maybe to get to the second round, they still look lethargic, then I worry. But going into the Spurs series, I'm not too worried about them. They got the greatest matchup they could get. I agree with you 100%.
Yep. All right, gentlemen. Let's talk about the 76ers, man, and what an amazing streak they've been on. Did they win?
Goddamn, Philadelphia.
They had the 14. Yeah, I know. I was getting the text back and forth. JQ was going off. But in spite of JQ's feelings, he's in his feelings right now. Tell me a little about, you know, Ben Simmons, and is he the obvious choice for Rookie of the Year? And that's tough because I don't know obvious because there's some contenders with Donovan Mitchell, some good players, but JQ, what do you think about that? Is he the obvious choice for Rookie of the Year?
I mean, I see both sides of it, you know, and I don't know if you saw what Donovan Mitchell wore the other day on his Adidas warm-up that had the definition of what a rookie was on the front of his shirt, which was a little subtle jab at Ben Simmons. But Ben Simmons has just been fantastic, and you can't knock that. I mean, he has been. You get down to the argument of, is he really a rookie because he was in the league even though he didn't play? And a part of me feels like he's not really a rookie, only in that you still are around other NBA players, the coach and the system. It's not all brand new to you. The plan is brand new to you. But the other pieces, the traveling with the team and all the things that he did, you know, were in place for him. So, you know, it's like, you know, but by the definition, by the letter of the law, he's a rookie. And as great as Donovan Mitchell has been and being the star for that Utah team in the Western Conference, Ben Simmons has just been ridiculous. And I don't think you can go wrong by naming him the Rookie of the Year.
Rob.
Well, you know, I totally agree. I definitely think that the NBA should do away with that, and Ben Simmons should not be classified as a rookie this year. But based on the current rules, And, you know, I think we had this conversation maybe about a month or a little bit over a month ago on our show, and I think we all kind of agreed that at that time it was really, really close between Ben Simmons and Donovan Mitchell. But I think Ben Simmons has separated himself tremendously. Even though Utah is having a phenomenal year, and they're the team, to me, that's really overachieved this year. As Andre was trying to allude to earlier, losing Gordon Haywood, I thought this team would not even come close to making the playoffs.
Right.
And for them to have an opportunity to not only to win their division and be the number three seed in the Western Conference, and they just trucked the Warriors by 40 points, I mean, they're having a phenomenal year as well. But Ben Simmons, man, Mr. Triple-Double, he's doing it all. I mean, this team seemed like they've even gotten better since Joel Embiid has been out. I mean, they just beat somebody by 80 points tonight practically. They just drilled them. And how many games in a row is now? 15, 16 in a row?
15.
I think it's 15. 15, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like I say, I know we talked about this topic maybe about a month or so ago or a little over that, and at that point it was really, really close. But, yeah, I think right now, I mean, it's I think Ben Simmons has really separated himself, even though he shouldn't be a rookie, classified as a rookie. But he's definitely separated himself, and I think he's definitely the clear-cut winner.
Yeah, but you know, you're right, and the more I think about it, I don't know if it's clear-cut, because say right now Portland is up 10, but it's still early. Say Utah gets the 3 seed, and you have Utah and Philadelphia both as their respective 3 seeds in their conferences, and we talk about how much better the Western Conference is than the Eastern Conference. I mean, do you think that plays into the voters' mindset of he's been, to me, Gobert is great defensively, but Donovan Mitchell has been the straw to stir that drink. He's still Reggie Jackson saying there. And if they're in the same spot in their respective conferences, but one conference everybody views as being tougher, do you think that will give him any kind of, you know, sway in the voters' mind of he's doing that in the Western Conference versus what you're doing in the East? I mean, it might be closer than you think, I guess is where I'm going with that, but I wouldn't be mad either way.
But, you know, another thing you got to look at, too, Ben Simmons plays in Philadelphia. Donovan Mitchell plays in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's close by us. Yeah, for sure.
I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
He's close.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. I was just throwing it out there for good fodder for people to think about.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, definitely a very good point. But I just think the timing of it, the way the Philadelphia is into the season, I think there's a long winning streak that they're on and how bad they've been for so long. I think the timing of it is really helping Ben Simmons.
I would agree with that. They're peaking at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rob some lucky snacking over there. I was going to, like, throw it to you as far as the chances of the 76ers. Do I need to, like, give that to JQ, Rob, man? You all right, man?
I can take it.
Go for it.
He's snacking over there. Go ahead, bro.
I tell you what, you know, Joel Embiid looked like he's not going to be back for game one here in the playoffs, but they've been winning pretty consistently, you know, going forward. And so it probably doesn't matter that he's not going to be back for game one. We don't know when he's going to be back. But I would say, if you look at the way the teams are playing as we speak, I mean, to me, it looked like Philadelphia's got a very good chance of getting to the Eastern Conference Finals and possibly to the NBA Finals with the way they're playing. I think they're definitely my prediction to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, do they have the experience to overtake? I mean, look at it. I mean, they're going to – I haven't looked at the official matchups yet for the Eastern Conference.
They get Miami.
They get Miami. And, Miami's got some veteran experience, but I like Philadelphia. I mean, I like Philadelphia in that series. And then you look at the second round, I think they get the winner of either Boston and Washington.
Milwaukee.
Boston-Milwaukee. Okay. So I guess Toronto gets Washington.
That's correct.
Okay. I mean, whoever wins that series, I like Philadelphia. I mean, Boston doesn't have Kyrie Irving. I like Philadelphia to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. I really do. And whether
crazy.
Or not they have the experience enough to beat LeBron or Toronto, that will be yet to be seen. But I definitely like them to get to the Eastern Conference Eastern Conference Finals. I'm going to say experience is going to overtake them at that point in the playoffs. So I'm going to say that's about as far as they go as to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Go ahead, JQ. Finish it up, though.
I'm not going to kill too much more of that because that's the points I was going to make. The draw for them also sets up very nicely. And plus, Embiid just has Whiteside's number. I mean, if you look at what they've done here throughout the season, not only is he beating him on the court, he's talking junk to him on and off the court. So I like that Philadelphia team. I think we've been talking about it here over the latter part of this season. I could see Philadelphia and Cleveland. And listen, if they can get Embiid and incorporate it back into that juggernaut they have rolling right now, the only thing that I worry about Philadelphia is J.J. Redick and Covington and their consistent outside three-point shooting, because you got to have that in the playoffs. They can beat you down low and they can rebound. They're going to have some good, decent assist numbers. But can they hit timely three-pointers, I worry about for them and their youth. If we're saying, the Eastern Conference Finals, you say that puts them at like 25% chance because you've got four teams at that point, two in the West, two in the East. But I just don't think that even if they come out surprisingly out of the East that they would beat a Golden State or a Houston. So I wouldn't give them a 0%, but I would put it probably at about 5 to 10% of them winning the title.
So you're saying there's a chance.
I'm saying there's a chance.
No, this is crazy because, 100% in agreement in the fact, too, like Rob, like you said, I mean, experience may definitely catch them in the end, but this is a very, very talented team. I know they added, Marinelli, and they also added Ilsovic from the Hawks. So, I mean, I'm not saying that's going to compel them to the over to the top, but that's, they added some key veterans to kind of, help that team, man. So, again, if you get it and indeed, who knows? I mean, they're too young to even, realize, hey, this is the playoffs. So, again, like I said, it's going to be – I think they're a very exciting team to watch. And, Lord have mercy, I don't want to see another Philly team win. So I'm hoping that they get knocked out. I mean, they would be insufferable. But, again, it's just one of those things, enjoy the ride, Philly. You got your Eagles, you got your Villanova. Lord have mercy, we're done, man. So, very exciting.
Well, I was a huge 76ers fan back in the day. I'm not going to lie. With Dr. J, Moses Malone, Maurice Hicks.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a big fan of those Sixers teams back in the day. So, it's kind of cool to see in the NBA that they're kind of back. And back in contention, I don't think any of us could have predicted this before the season. Maybe you sneak in as an 8 seed. Probably the best hopes that we could have imagined for the 76ers. But for them to be the 3 seed and the way they're trending right now is incredible, I think, for the NBA and that organization to be back to that level. Yeah.
A little bit. No. And this is not about Philadelphia. I promise you. The reason why I say a little bit, because for that piece of it, the other piece of it, and the same thing with the Astros in baseball, it encourages teams to tank more. Like, look what they did. They trusted the process, quote unquote, and 3-4 years later, now they're exceeding expectations from all of us. They've amassed those picks and turned them into talent, and now they're back at the top. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're going to help curb tanking when you have that example in your league like they did it. Why can't we do it? Yeah, we're going to keep doing this until we find the right pieces, and then we'll go all in on winning. So we're going to have more of the tanking go on, and I know the NBA doesn't want that. So it's a little bittersweet. I hear what you're saying. It's always good when the original and older franchises stay relevant. It's good for all the franchises when that happens in any league. But the way they got there is my point of, will it, I think it's going to impact how people still do business. Like, oh, well, they tanked and got there. Why not us? So that's my only, to play a little rain on the parade a little bit, is the only thing for the NBA is I know they got to be cognizant of that.
Yeah. I think I just heard something just fairly recent here. This will be the first time in, I can't remember how long, but I know a very, very long time in the NBA that you won't have an NBA team in the playoffs from New York, L.A., or Chicago, the three largest markets in the United States.
Right, that's crazy. Yeah.
That is crazy.
What's that?
Hey, I was going to say, too, just to kind of relate to the Atlanta Hawks situation in regarding tanking, JQ, some of the guys, and I'm not sure, we're not in the locker rooms, so we don't know a lot of things that are going on, but some are like, hey, as far as tanking, like, hey, we all got families, we're trying to feed, folk, whatever, so, again, it's tough whenever you kind of use that word because, obviously, we don't know, it's tough to kind of make that call because I know, like, before – you know, clearly I don't know if you're just playing or whatever, you know, but at least from the Hawks' perspective, they were basically saying, hey, you know, we're playing for pride here. We want to keep winning in spite of what the fans think, you know, get a better pick, you know. So, I mean, I don't know if that was the same thing back in the day, the frozen envelope for the Knicks, whatever, but, you know, just something to curb out there too that, you know, I mean, if you're going to play, you just don't have any chemistry, you're going to lose. We get that perspective too, but just, hopefully they still have some pride as far as, you know, we're going to play the hat, you know, whatever too, as opposed to just, I just want to lose is lose, man. So anyway, I think if you're an athlete, you still have that type of thing too. Yeah. So.
No. And I mean, I get that from a professional athlete standpoint, but they aren't the ones signing the players and they aren't the coach who wants playing it. You can have all the pride if you want to, but if you're the 10th best player on your team and you shouldn't be starting and they're starting you because they're trying to tank, then, yeah, you're out there playing hard. But if you're overmatched by the teams you're playing against because you really should only be playing 15, maybe 20 minutes a game at most, and you're playing 33 to 35 because they're trying to, you know, they're trying to tank and suppose, you know, player evaluation.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have the pride and you're out there playing. I don't think the players are out there tanking. But if you don't put your best foot forward in terms of your best matchups and your best rotations – as a coaching staff, because you got a bigger goal in mind, then it takes it out of the player's hands to me.
Fair enough. I get it. That's a good call. Way to do that. Okay. I'm just saying because it was interesting to see that perspective too. Because, you know, we're all like, man, keep on losing for better pick, and they're like, hey guys, we're not gonna lose because of y'all. I mean, we got families to feed. You know, we're trying to get better. You know, so I thought it was an interesting perspective on the other side of that too. So anyway, good call. I like the rebuttal. We're having fun. Hey, all right. Hey Rob, does Kevin Durant get a pass from the media?
I think so a little bit. I really do. Because I don't, you know, when we saw this transition when LeBron went to Miami, you know, how he got grilled for that. And part of that, LeBron obviously brought on himself with the not one, the not two, the not three, the not four, but the five and six and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't see Durant. Durant got some, but nowhere near as much as LeBron did when he left OKC to join Golden State. And part of it is I think the media didn't call him out on as much as Durant actually said something via Twitter about LeBron joining Miami, and then he turns around and did the same thing. So I don't think he got as grilled as much. And for making that transition as much as LeBron did, and I also think, you know he's Durant has been very confrontational with the referees this year too, and so I think he's even getting a slight pass from that too. But I do like the animated spirit that he's showing on the court. I do like that aspect that, you know, he didn't have that before. He was a little. Probably a little soft on the court in that regard. I do like that aspect of his game, that he's showing a little bit more passion, a little bit more aggression and things of that nature. But I do think he is getting a little bit of a pass from the media.
I would agree with that 100% for the things that you just stated. Yeah, I like the edge. I like the heel turn that he's kind of had going from OKC to Golden State. But I agree. I feel like the most of his vitriol comes from the fans and from social media, but not from the media itself, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like you're right that the media gave LeBron a harder time. And like you said, a lot of it was self-inflicted with the press conference and taking my, you know, talents to South Beach and whatnot. But, yeah, he's gotten a pass, I think, from the media and the fact that he, like you said, he's just been nasty on the court. And I like it. I like the edge that he's playing with. But, you know, he's not being called out on it like that. You know, he's been going to refs, like, super hard this year. You know, going head to head with Westbrook, you know, forehead to forehead. Like, he's just been, he's taken it up another level. And like I said, I agree with you. I like that. But I don't feel like if it was, you know, if it was LeBron or somebody else, they would have been like, oh, look at him. See, he didn't went there and lost his mind. I think that would have been more of the narrative where it's like, KD, well, you know, he's just maturing and growing and we like it. It's like they wanted him to do that where they didn't want LeBron to do that. So I think that's where you get that piece of it. They wanted the whole hometown story, stay with Cleveland. And while it worked out on the second time through, they didn't want him to leave because they wanted that story to remain for them, the media-wise, so they could, you know, run it into the ground. And he took that from them. And I think that was a piece of it where for KD, it was like, well, you know, Westbrook don't respect him enough. And, you know, why would you not go there to go and stay if you had a chance to? All of us would. So they kind of spun their own narratives around it. So it's definitely not been the same kind of reaction from the media for KD as it was for LeBron.
Mm-hmm. All right. Keep it going. Hey, does James Harden deserve to be MVP? Let's keep talking about this, JQ.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, you can't argue with his numbers and what he's done. And, you know, more often than not, the MVP is going to go to the best player on the best team. When they got the one seed, they got the best overall record. He's playing lights out. And, I mean, he's actually trying on defense where before he was just a black hole. Like what I like to say, he couldn't guard a chair before this year. And now, you know, he's actually trying on that on the defensive side. And he's not no lockdown defender. Don't get me wrong. But he's actually putting forth the effort. And I think part of that is Chris Paul holding him more accountable. But it's hard to argue against him. The only thing that you could is LeBron is just, you know, in year 15 is just playing so out of his mind that you're like, oh, my gosh, he's played, you know, all 82 games I think he played today. Or either if you play 81 of 82, that's still, you know, phenomenal in this day and age of resting your superstars for at least 3 to 7 games a year. He played 81 games. So yeah. LeBron, to me,
he
is
played,
the
he didn't play the whole game tonight. They took him out fairly early.
Okay. So they got him. They basically got him the stat of playing in all 82 because they lost to
exactly.
him tonight. But honestly, I think that was strategic. I think they preferred to play Indiana, even though Indiana had a 3-1 over in the course of the year against them. That Indiana-Toronto two-step, I think he likes better than having to play, you know, Miami and play Dwayne and then potentially play in Boston. I think LeBron would prefer to be in there, but he won't say it. But, you know, back to it, I Harden, I think, is deserving. I mean, it may be closer than people might want. With LeBron, you know, having the year he's having. But, you know, again, it's one of those things like we talked about rookie of the year. If they split it, if one won versus the other one, I would have a problem either way, to be honest.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's definitely Harden. And as JQ mentioned, a lot has to do with the season that the Rockets have had. And he's been a big part of that, obviously. What did he win?
Yep.
65, 66 a game, maybe 67. I can't remember the exact number. But he's been a big part of that and made the number one team in the Western Conference. And I think before the season, if you'd have told me Houston would have been a number one seed, I would have said you're crazy. It's going to be Golden State. And so I think for and he's had a reason to do with that. Obviously, the team around him has gotten a lot better as well, but he's still been a big part of that. He's there. That offense runs through him. He makes that offense go. He's almost unguardable. He's gotten a little bit better on defense. He's not a better player than LeBron James, but he's the MVP of the league this season, and deservedly so.
It's almost like Michael.
That's the best
Michael
way to say
it. So,
there were some years that Michael Jordan didn't win the MVP, but you knew he was still the best player in the league, and I think that's a classic example of this year. You saw some years where Charles Barkley won it and some other players from time to time. Karl Malone, but we all knew Jordan was still the best player in the league at that time. And it's the same thing it is right now. LeBron's the best player in the league, but he's just not going to be the MVP this year. And deservedly so, it should go to Harden.
Yeah, I was going to say, took your words out of my mouth. It's the Michael Jordan treatment. It's like, I feel like sometimes they just didn't want it for voting for somebody other than Michael. Right now with LeBron, I think last year with Westbrook and this year with Harden, you average a triple-double in Westbrook's case, you're going to win the MVP. Harden again. The best team in the best conference with the best record, you know, and what he's done. Like, on that pick and roll, like they call it Harden Island, you get out there and you just out there one-on-one with Harden off that pick and roll, and he is just out there embarrassing folks. You can talk to Wesley out there from the Clippers about, you know, being a viral sensation for all the wrong reasons for getting crossed up and having a J put in your eye. So, I mean, yeah, he's got a signature play in that play to go along with the year that he's had. I can't see him losing, but I can see LeBron making it close. But, yeah, I agree with you, Rob. It has to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, absolutely. The Sixers at the end of the season was 16 straight wins. Wow.
That's good. Good for them, yeah. Man, we finished it strong. Hey, did LeBron do the right thing whenever he left the Heat for the Cavs, Rob?
I'm going to say yes for two reasons. I think – he needed to do that for his hometown areas. I think he couldn't, the way he left, couldn't have been the last impression of the state of Ohio having of him. And obviously he was able to bring them a championship. And his time there may not be over. I do think, I failed to mention this earlier. I do think if he does leave, he will be to Philadelphia. I think that's the only team he would leave Cleveland for, but his time is there may not be done, so who knows about more championships, but I think he did make the right decision by leaving Miami. And at that time, Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, you can see that their bodies were starting to fall apart. And unfortunately, for Chris Bosh's sake, you know, our prayers go out to him for what he's dealing with. And but he had to make that right decision in order for him to be on a competitive situation as well as repaying his hometown.
Yeah, that absolutely. And I'm not going to take it so much. I will put Chris Bosh first. I mean, I think it's a good story, and NBA loves it going back to Cleveland. But let's be honest. They had the number one pick, and they had Kyrie Irving. So I think it had a lot to do with that as well. In terms of going back home, it was a much more palatable situation to go back when you got Kyrie and you had that ability, had the number one pick, and you can trade it and get Kevin Love to add that third all-star, and you're basically recreating what you had in Miami. It's part of the big reason why he went back to Cleveland. But Chris Bosh, let's make no mistake about it. He was a big reason why they were able to win those championships, and him not being able to play anymore due to the blood issue that he's having. And then Dwayne Wade just basically falling off a cliff athletic-wise, and that was his strong suit of his game, so to speak. To me, it was, you can say what you want to say about it, but you look back at it and say, you know, he doesn't have another championship in Miami if he don't leave, but the one he got in Cleveland. So he'd still be a two in my book, unless they were able to do some wild, crazy willing and dealing. And I guess you can't count Pat Riley out of that situation that he could do that. But I don't. I think Cleveland was the best move. And, again, he's a smart dude. I agree with you, Rob. I mean, a piece of me knows that he's Hollywood anyway. He's got the two homes out there, and he might do that. But if you're talking about staying in the East and going to a team, you know, where they hopefully don't have to gut all the role players to sign him, Philadelphia is an excellent spot for him to land at. So I look at him as making the right moves and understanding what he's doing. So, to me, yeah, a resounding yes. Fantastic decision to leave.
Yep. Cool.
Russell Westbrook, 20 rebounds and 19 assists tonight. Unbelievable.
He only needed 16. He got 20. Average a triple-double again. Yep.
There it is. Gentlemen, we got about 8 minutes here. So let's talk about what is ahead for Kawhi Leonard. And let's kick it to you. Keep it on you, JQ. What's next? Or what's ahead?
Oh, man. Listen, I honestly don't know, only because you've never seen this with the San Antonio Spurs. They are such a first-class, well-buttoned organization, keep everything in-house. Everybody does it. We talk about the Patriot way. They do it the Spur way in the NBA. And, you know, we talked about his uncle being in charge now, and does he have his own agenda? But, you know, when you got Tony Parker and Manu calling you out and whatnot, and the players only mean imploring you to come back, honestly, I don't know. I could see them patching it up like, no, we still love you, dude. We're hoping to get you back for this run. But I could see him looking at them and saying, man, you know what, F y'all. You know, that's how y'all going to treat me. Like, I'm hurt, and that's how you're going to do it. Not only are you going to treat me like that, you're going to put me on Front Street and put it in the news. I could see him saying, you know what, I'm not dealing with this. I'm good enough to where I can go anywhere and be good. I don't need you, Pop. You need me more than I need you, with the way things have changed in the tenor of his business camp with his uncle. So, to me, it's 50-50. Yep. I honestly can't say one way or the other what's going to happen. Hopefully he comes back healthy and is able to be the Kawhi that we've all seen and learned to love and like to see his game on the court. But in terms of him and the San Antonio Spurs, I honestly do not know.
Wow. All right, Rob. Your thoughts, bro.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I agree. I think it's definitely 50-50. I think the Spurs are going to look for some ways to move him this offseason based on what has happened this past season. I mean, there are reports that are saying he's trying to do everything he can to come back to the Spurs, but, you know, I think the Spurs may be almost at the situation where they kind of fed up with it, and I think the Spurs are going to definitely look around the league and see what they can get for Kawhi Leonard in return. I really do. And so I really do think it's 50-50. I think if the Spurs feel like they can get the right deal for him, I think they're going to move him. I really do. I don't think this is something that Greg Popovich wants to deal with. As we talked about, this is not the Spurs' culture and what they've had to deal with ever since they drafted David Robinson back in 1988 or 89. I can't remember the exact year. But they haven't had this culture they haven't had a player, a superstar, has been treating an organization like this in the last 30 years. And I don't think the Spurs are going to put up with it. I really don't. So I definitely think they're going to look around and see what kind of deal they can get for Kawhi Leonard. And if they get the right offer, the right deal, I think they're definitely going to move him.
This is one of the most weirdest situations, too, because, again, we've talked about this throughout the shows. And just there's where there's smoke, there's fire. I think there's something else happening that, you know, obviously it's a pretty tight-knit thing, and Popovich isn't letting a lot get out. But I do think there's something else happening, gentlemen. So, again, not sure when, if and will it'll come out, but 100% agree with you, Rob, that they're going to move Kawhi if the picks are right, too. So, again, good job and good conversation, gentlemen. Excuse me. All right, it is 5 minutes.
Markelle Fultz had a triple-double for the Sixers.
Wow. Just triple-double city, man. Dub city, triple-double city. Hey, not sure why Rob put this in here, JQ, but we're going to let Rob talk about the White Sox and Twins here. I'm not really sure what's happening with Rob, so yeah, go ahead.
No, you did not.
Did JQ ask for that?
Yeah, I did.
Ask for that?
I said you need to tell the Twins fans why their team is not for real.
Well, I mean, listen, in that American League, I just don't see them with the way Boston is playing, the way New York is constructed, if they can bounce back. You got the defending champs in Houston. You got Ohtani just showing his whole entire Asian booty hole in Los Angeles. I mean, you just
– I mean,
he is. He is cutting up. I mean, in a good way. He's cutting up in a good way for the Angels. I just don't think they have enough. I mean, I like Dozier. I like Sano. Logan Morrison, I just don't think they have the pitching staff to make a long dent. Can they make a wild card? Yeah, probably. So they might be able to win the division if Cleveland keeps stumbling, because they aren't really hitting right now. But that Cleveland pitching is still pretty good. I think they're going to find a way to the bats as it gets warmer to start hitting a little bit better. I just don't think they have enough pitching-wise to get over the hump in that American League. I just don't. I mean, Boston is playing out of control, and I'm not going to count Houston out because they flat out can deal as well with Keuchel and Verlander as well, especially with all the bats they have on that team. Just too many to go into to name with them all. I just don't know. I mean, it's a good start. And, again, we talk about it. You know, we remember growing up with the Twins, with Kirby Puckett and whatnot, and it's good for the city, but for them. But I don't see them having enough. We look at them like, yeah, you know what, they're right there on the cusp of being World Series champs. I don't. If you're Minnesota, if you're the Twins and you're looking at it like the T-Wolves, like we just want to get back to the dance and that's good for us, then, yeah, you could be excited, and I think you should be, because with the two wild cards, they have a chance. But to, you know, to go deep to the ALCS, to the World Series, I just don't see that happening this year.
Rob.
Definitely not the White Sox.
2 minutes and 53 seconds.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, we certainly appreciate everyone for tuning in again on tonight.
Rob, you got a little time. You got 2 minutes and 53 seconds. I was saying I wanted to give you a quick heads up because you were getting ready to do your point about the Twins. So I apologize for being a little early there, but you might as well go ahead and set it up now. It's like 30 seconds here. Go ahead, bro. Go ahead. Jump on the gun. Go ahead.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, once again, we appreciate everyone for tuning in on tonight. Another great night of talking sports with the 12th man. We still got more sports to talk about. We got football in the OT portion. So you definitely want to hear our mock draft coverage. Click on the same link on tomorrow to get the latest information on the draft and some other football news. Unfortunately, we can't give you this portion of the show live. So please click on the same link on tomorrow to get more information. We're going to come right back at you on Sunday night. We're going to try something new for you all. Sunday night, this coming Sunday night, we're going to go on 3 days rest. We're talking baseball playoff rest. 3 days rest. That's strong. So we're going to come right back to you on Sunday night.
I love it.
11 p.m. Eastern time, 10 p.m. Central time. We're coming to you with a Sunday night special. We'll have 2 days of NBA playoffs pretty much done. At that particular time, so we'll get a sneak peek on how things are going after game ones of the NBA playoffs. And we'll probably have more draft talk, a lot going on in the sports world. You don't want to miss us on our Sunday night, new time, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central. You don't want to miss it. Good night, people.
Yeah, I'm just going to say Cincinnati, man. I've been waiting after the Super Bowl and spring training. And this is what y'all do? I mean, you come out and go 2-9? I mean, is that what's hot in the streets in Cincinnati? That's what we're doing? I'm just going to put that out there. We're tired. Bearcats blowing 20-point leads. The Bengals doing Bengal things. The Reds just not relevant. Come on, man. Y'all, you got to help us out. Signed every
Cincinnati
fan in the
world. Hey, y'all had the Nasty Boys.
Man, that is a 1990. You get, hey, listen.
Nasty Boys.
We got to get relevant. That's almost 30 years.
Rob Dibble and Randy Myers. Who's that third guy?
Norm Charlton.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the Big Red Machine in the 70s.
Lenny Dykstra.
Come on, man. Come on, the 70s and 1990. That proves my point right there. Let's
Pete
get it together.
Pete Rose and Joe Marcus?
The man, listen, everybody, we appreciate
Johnny
y'all.
Bench.
Don't listen to this foolishness. They're talking about going to the museum. I'm talking about right now. That's the museum stuff. Well, we holler at y'all next week. We'll holler at y'all on Sunday. So, like you said, 3 days rest, you know, get that arm loose, get some ice on that shoulder so we can come back on 3 days rest. We appreciate y'all hanging in there with us.
I can't help it.
2-9, bro. They suck.
Hey, still
early.
Slight surprise. So yeah, it is early.
My Yankees off to a rough start, too.
Hey, man.
Yeah, they got
surprisingly, the Braves
came back
for
14 on the Red Sox today. We got David Price today.
I told you about David Price. Yeah, your Braves are sneaky. Dansby Swanson turned it around a little bit. I mean, they under the radar, sneaking through. I see them.
They were second. They were second, but then, you know, obviously they had a tough, you know, they won today. You know, they lost the first year in Washington, but again, totally unexpected again. So, I mean, they don't have, like I said, you know, we're still figuring out what's up with wrong with Julio, you know, but, you know, I like McCarthy, I like what he's been doing. It's been a good pickup right now. And, you know, Fulte has some, you know, has his ups and downs, but like I said, it's pretty surprising. So we'll keep an eye on the Braves, and Acuna's probably coming up like 2 weeks or so, man. So this is going to be exciting, man.
Mm-hmm.
So,
probably this weekend.
Man. Oh, is it this weekend? Is it this weekend?
Yeah, it's April 13th.
They gave 13th. That's right, man. So Preston Tucker's been playing really well, man. So they got to figure out what to do. Maybe, I don't know if they're going to trade Markakis or what, man. But, yeah, that's going to be an interesting scenario with the Braves. But, yeah, like I said, the future is already here, man. I love it. All right. Hey, I'm excited about
the Spurs have lost 7 straight road games. Man, they don't have a chance in the playoffs.
Mm-mm.
Thanks for that in a minute here. So I'm excited to talk some NFL and Rob. I can't wait to hear about our breakdown with the strengths and weaknesses of the top QB prospects in the draft. So this is going to be fantastic. So as we get ready to peek into the draft here, and I guess the question is, should the Patriots, damn you, Rob, look for Tom Brady's replacement now? Rob. Rob.
I'm going to say absolutely yes. And you, mm-hmm. you thought you had his replacement on the team, and, you know, there was some non-agreements in the organization on what to do with Jimmy Garoppolo last season. So I think the Patriots are definitely looking for another guy. And matter of fact, on my latest mock, I had them taking Mason Rudolph in the second round, and they might even take Mason Rudolph at number 31 at the end of the first round. And I think that is also in consideration for the Patriots. I think that's the guy they're targeting right now. But right now I haven't taken him in the second round, Mason Rudolph. So I definitely think they're looking at a guy who they can prepare to be Brady's heir apparent. It may not be definitely won't be next year. It may not be the following year. But I definitely think maybe in 3 years from now they're looking at getting that guy in there now. To get him groomed and they're ready to be, and I think Rudolph is the guy that they're targeting right now. Like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if they even take him at 31, or even move up to get him in mid 20s. I even get the Saints looking at him at 27.
Huh. Yeah, I could see that.
Wow,
I could see that. And the answer is yes. I mean, Tom Brady's 55 years old. I mean, at some point, you've got to move on into the future. And they may come back and rule today that they didn't trade Tom Brady like they did all the other stars, you know, before it was too late and kept Garoppolo. I'm just putting it out there. I know that sounds, you know, blasphemous to say, but they have a history of trading guys, you know, too soon rather than too late. And they didn't do that with Tom Brady. And I wonder, you know, that friction that exists in that locker room now about it, because you talked about, you know, Belichick, Imagine Gronk for using the TB12 method in front of the teammates, you know what I mean? And that's part of the reason why Gronk was noncommittal about whether or not he was going to play. So I think that goes into between those two guys being, you know, disenfranchised, so to speak, with Bill Belichick, after they try to find their replacements, not that you can, you know, really replace those two guys, but trying to turn the page and, you know, get younger and move forward and turn the era over in New England. So I agree. I think you have to. I think you have to do that. You keep banking on a 40, 41-year-old quarterback. I mean, Breeze is doing it, don't get me wrong, but at some point they're going to fall off that cliff and you can't be caught flat-footed.
You're crazy, man.
Yeah.
This is probably
right now, I have taken,
you're not getting rid of Tom Brady. Go ahead.
They have taken. I haven't taken Mason Rudolph at 43 in the second round.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Wow.
Same area they took Garoppolo.
They definitely have a pattern. Mm-hmm. Let's kick it to the mock draft coverage there, Rob. Go ahead, man. Actually, let's talk about Josh Rosen first, and before we get into that, too, because I'm kind of curious about this. I'm going to spend the next time talking about the QB strength and weakness and everything like that, too, Rob. So go ahead, man. If you should stop talking, your boy.
Well, I mean, you know, it's going to be very interesting how teams are perceiving Josh Rosen. Obviously, when you look at his game tape and you look at his pocket awareness to the way he delivers the football, you know, obviously his mechanic seems to be the best out of all of these guys as entering the draft. But he's, you know, somewhat of an enigma as far as the way he communicates and things of that nature off the field. Obviously, he's also coming from a wealthy family, too. So you have to wonder if the drive is there and things of that nature as well. You know, just because of his, you know, his upbringing and things of that nature. And, you know, I think he's saying too much right now because, you know, the perception is that it looked like he didn't care. And so now I think he's coming up and he's talking too much, trying to prove the fact that he does care. And so, I mean, and personally, I think he needs to leave that in the meeting rooms. I don't think he needs to be trying to prove a point to the media. And so I really do think he needs to stop talking to the media. He needs to prove these things to these organizations in the meeting rooms and in the meeting rooms only. And you know, I'm the best quarterback in the draft. I'm going to, however many Brady wins, I'm going to win more than him. I think he needs to stop saying that to the media and leave his, he needs to do his selling. He needs to do his selling in these organizations or meeting with these organizations and stop talking to the media. But he's trying to prove a point that he cares, and the perception is that he doesn't care.
Yeah, and his coach, Jim Moore, didn't help him. And I think that's part of the reason why he got out there and tried to be over the top with it, Rob, is because, you know, he's a millennial, and if you don't feel challenged, it's like, well, maybe he should be feeling challenged. So you didn't challenge him? That's more on you as a coach. But Rosen has been outspoken, you know, throughout his career there at UCLA. We talked about, you know, the workload they have been going through. If you're trying to be a for real student, but, you know, balancing all the things that UCLA football was asking of him and probably was asking of any, you know, top-notch quarterback or player at any strong Division I university that fancies themselves to, as a playoff hopeful. So, I mean, I think he does. I agree. I think part of it, though, is that he just is trying to do too much to dispel those myths and those rumors and what people are actually saying to his coach. I mean, Jim Moore, you know, just be quiet, bro. Why would you do that to him heading into this draft? Like, I just – that to me, if I'm a commit, I'm looking at Jim Moore like, bro, is that how you're going to do me when I get ready to try to go to the NFL? If that's the case, I'm going to go anywhere else to a good program if they'll have me because they're going to support me. I don't really feel like Jim Moore has supported him. And that's kind of where you start to see the snowball effect here in the past couple of weeks of him trying to get out there and get in front of what Jim Moore was saying about him. So, yeah, I agree with you, Rob. You know, he's got to, you know, not get so in his feelings, so to speak, and, you know, say, you know, you see what I can do in the game film. I do care. Do all that talking in the meetings with the teams individually and then just let the you know, chips fall where they may.
All right. Good call. Hey, Rob, you got the mock draft coverage there, bro.
Yeah, obviously there's a few changes, you know, since our last show. And right now I have Josh Allen up to the number one position. I've had Sam Darnold at number one probably for most of my mock drafts. Maybe there was a few I might have had Saquon Barkley, but right now I have Josh Allen at the number one spot. I think the consensus is Cleveland has pretty much narrowed it down to Allen and Darnold, but the consensus is they're probably leaning more toward Josh Allen, you know, being used to being able to play in that cold weather, strong arm, things of that nature as well. You know, we'll get more into detail in, you know, our projections on these quarterbacks here shortly. But right now I have Allen at the one spot, Darnold at the two. You know, the Giants, we talked about this before, you know, they have a big part in controlling this draft. I can see them going Darnold here. I can see them going Saquon Barkley. And I think they're getting really high on Bradley Chubb right now. So if they were to go to a position player, I'm actually leaning toward them going with Chubb over Barkley. I mean, they are really becoming a huge fan of Bradley Chubb. But right now, I'll stick with Darnold. My personal opinion, I still don't think they could pass up a potential franchise quarterback here when your quarterback is at the age of Eli Manning. Still have Rosen to the Jets. Bradley Chubb to Cleveland. I know J.Q. is not going to like that.
Damn it.
If he does fall to number four, Cleveland's sitting pretty here. They're going to get a quarterback and a good player. We know that.
Yeah.
Cleveland will get either Chubb or Barkley and a quarterback. They're going to sit pretty here with this draft. But I'm going to say they're going to get Chubb because even if the Giants take a player, then Cleveland's going to get the other one at four. And, they're going to sit pretty regardless in this draft. But right now I'm going to say they're going to go with Chubb. Right now I have a surprise at five is I think either Denver takes Baker Mayfield or Buffalo trades up to five and take Baker Mayfield. I think Baker Mayfield will go at the number five spot. It just depends on who comes up and get him right there. Either Denver stands pat and takes him or Buffalo is going to come up to get him at that spot. And then Miami can put together a good package. They may even come up to number five and get him. And there's a couple of possibilities. I definitely think that's kind of where Baker Mayfield is going to go at that five spot. And if Saquon Barkley falls at number six, Indianapolis is running to the podium. 80-year-old Frank Gore has left the coach now. So yeah, they definitely need a running back there. If Chubb or Barkley falls at number six, Indianapolis is running to the podium. So in this particular case, they'll get Barkley. Quentin Nelson, number seven. I move Roquan Smith up to number nine to San Fran. Vita Vea, the defensive tackle, Washington, Oakland. Another surprise, you see, I got Lamar Jackson going number 11 to Miami. And he's going to go somewhere in that ballpark, either to Miami or to Buffalo, the number 12 spot. Minka Fitzpatrick. Here's a guy at one point you thought was a sure top five pick, probably going to go somewhere between 8 and 15 now. And so I'm going number 13 to Washington. Denzel Ward, cornerback to Green Bay. DJ Moore, wide receiver, Maryland. Got him staying close to home and go to Baltimore. Got a trade at number 17. Seattle moves up the spot to take Marcus Davenport, defensive end, Texas San Antonio. They're definitely looking for an edge rusher. And if Davenport falls that close to them, they would take him. If not, you got to consider a guy like Harold Landry to Seattle right there. Calvin Ridley, in numerous drafts, I had him tied to Dallas, and I have him tied to Dallas in this one. Marcus Hurst, I wasn't trying to be funny, JQ. I got you a Michigan player at 21 to Cincinnati.
Come on, man. Don't, no.
I wasn't trying to play fully a joke on you, but defensive tackle for research. New England definitely needs an offensive tackle at some point in this draft. I haven't taken Colton Miller, 6'7" tackle from UCLA. Isaiah Wynn, the guard center from Georgia to Carolina. Have the Falcons taking James Daniels, another interior offensive lineman who play guard and center from Iowa. I have my Saints taking the center from Arkansas, Frank Ragnow, who's really moving up draft boards as well. Cortland Sutton in the trade, I have him taking Jacksonville, moving up a spot to take him at 28. Harold Landry, edge rusher to Pittsburgh at 29. Will Hernandez to Minnesota. Sam Hubbard, defensive end, Ohio State, have him going to 32 there in the first round. The Eagles would love to get an offensive tackle right there too, but most of the guys that would be left, maybe a Connor Williams from Texas could go 32 to the Eagles, but I have him going 36 to Indy as we speak. Tampa, Ronald Jones, they need to replace Doug Martin. I have him going in the second round. Mike Hughes falls to the second round of Denver at 40. Darius Geis, Marshawn Lynch, you don't know how long he's going to be playing. I have Oakland taking Darius Geis at 41. Christian Kirk, wide receiver of Miami at 42. Got to replace Jarvis Landry there. We already talked about Orlando Brown, having fallen to Green Bay at 45. Dante Jackson, cornerback LSU, speedy corner, who's versatile, can play some safety and corner. Him going to Cincinnati at 46. Nick Chubb from Georgia, 47, Arizona. James Washington, wide receiver, Oklahoma State to the Chargers. Kerryon Johnson, Detroit gets the running back in the second round from Auburn.
It is another good pick.
And let's see, Sony Michel, running back, Georgia to Buffalo at 56. Atlanta takes Hayden Hurst, tight end from South Carolina. San Fran gets the edge rusher, Lorenzo Carter from Georgia at 59. DJ Chark, another speedy wide receiver from LSU, goes 63 to New England. So those are just a few of the picks from the second round. I need some water. I'm tired.
Yeah, I'm going to say that, buddy. Take it.
take a
breath.
JQ, do you
I mean,
want to
yeah,
add
I,
anything
I,
to that? Yeah. I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I think Cleveland will make some mistake by taking Josh Allen number one. He needs a lot of coaching up. His mechanics are – he may have the biggest arm, but his mechanics, I think, are the worst of anybody of those five quarterbacks that we've kind of pegged there going in that top 10, top 15. Oakland, Vita Vea, I mean, they were atrocious against the run last year. That it would go a long way. I think that would be an excellent pick for Oakland. Miami, you talk about Lamar Jackson, the ankle, he's also from Miami. If you're Ryan Tannehill, you just say, go ahead and cut me, player, or trade me, because the groundswell every time he makes a mistake to get Lamar Jackson, a local kid, to come play, is going to be really strong for Miami to overcome and not put him in there. DJ Moore is a good pick for Baltimore. They need help at the wide receiver for sure. I also think the same way with Dallas with Calvin Ridley. That's a really good pick. Don't even get me started on Maurice Hurst, because I will really turn the TV off. I'd be pissed. But again, honestly, Cincinnati, I'm telling you, if Isaiah Wynn is there, they need help. They still believe that they just need to shore it up around Andy Dalton. They got a chance to get back to the playoffs. And you know how Marvin is about a Georgia player that has first-round grade. I can see them taking them there. I think Atlanta getting James Daniels is a good pick. New Orleans, I mean, offensive line, yeah, they had a really solid running game. I'm not quite sure how many offensive linemen y'all lost this offseason, so I'm not sure if they do that.
I think Frank Ragnow is actually going to be in play with Cincinnati at 21, too. So that's another guy that Cincinnati is going to give a strong look at, center from Arkansas, Frank Ragnow. And, the Saints, you know, typically, historically, they're going to take best player available regardless of the pick. And, you know, Max Unger is getting a little bit up there in age, even though he had a very good season this past year. And for whatever reason, Sean Payton would draft offensive linemen in every draft. Every draft.
<Yeah.
laughs> He will draft offensive linemen. And, Ryan Ramczyk, we didn't saw that one coming last year. And next thing you know, he's starting on offensive line as a rookie. And but every draft he's going to draft offensive linemen, or two or three.
Yeah, I like Hayden Hurst for Atlanta as well. I think that's a really good pick and another good weapon for Matt Ryan in that offense. You know, going in the middle with Julio taking that safety out the way. Hayden Hurst can come in, and if he stays healthy, you know, knock on wood, he could have a really big rookie year. I think that if Atlanta would pray that Hayden Hurst falls to them at 58. So I mean, I agree with what you have happening. Miami getting Christian Kirk. If they come out of those first two rounds with Lamar Jackson and Christian Kirk, I mean, listen, New England is not only going to hold that division for so long. That is a really nice 1-2 of getting absolute infusion of speed on that offense. And then you got the running back from Alabama, Kenyon Drake, that showed up after they traded Ajayi. And you're only going to get about 5 to 10 carries for Gore now. So if you're able to do that, to replace him, Landry, with Kirk, and upgrade, to me, from Tannehill to Lamar Jackson, That's a very nice 1-2 punch from Miami.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He talked about Atlanta with Hayden Hurst. Don't be surprised if Atlanta takes a wide receiver pretty high in this draft, too. And I think, you know, there's a lot of talk within the Falcons organization with them feeling like they only had one weapon in the passing game last year, and that was Julio Jones. And so there's some talk that they not only tight end, but they could also be looking at a receiver position pretty high in this draft, too. We do know they would like to get a defensive tackle and interior lineman too. And so obviously, you know, we'll see. But, you know, in this particular mock, I have them going with an interior lineman and a tight end. And, you're right. I mean, I personally, as a Saints fan, I don't want to see a Hayden Hurst go to the Falcons. But,
right.
But the way this mock falls up, you know, it would definitely be a really good pick for them. You know, you talked about Miami. I mean, if that comes into play, you're right. And, you know, obviously Cleveland, you know, if you come out of this draft with a quarterback, and we'll go into Josh Allen's situation here shortly, but if you get the quarterback and he turns out to be good and you get a Bradley Chubb, I mean, I haven't taken Rashawn Evans, linebacker from Alabama, first pick in the second round. And that's a pretty good pick in that spot. And then come back at 35 and get Brian O'Neill, offensive tackle from Pittsburgh, another guy that could probably be a starting tackle in this league for a long time. And then you close out the second round with Jesse Bates, safety from Wake Forest. They got 3 second-round picks. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yep. God damn it, Cleveland.
good call. Just really quick about my Falcons. I'm kind of convinced. I'm not sure they may go deep in that first pick. And I agree that there's a wide receiver or offensive player somewhere in that war room. So again, I'm not sure if Steve Sarkisian can even do anything with it, man. So that's my problem with that. So you know, to get a weapon, I hope he gets some help, like calling plays, because you know he's not impressed me at all. Let's talk about these really quickly because we're wrapping this up here. Let's talk about the strengths and weaknesses of some quarterbacks here. And I guess, Rob, let's just kind of like talk about this of each of the top QB prospects. And I'm not sure if we're going 5 deep, 4 deep. So Rob, set the table, and then we'll kind of fill in from there. So go ahead, bro.
Yeah, well, we'll cover from Josh Allen to Mason Rudolph, and we'll go from there. We'll end it with that. I think, you know, obviously I think JQ covered the Josh Allen piece pretty well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the NFL scouts are enamored with his size. He's got the hand size, too. And as far as taking care of the football and gripping the football and not having the fumbling issues and things of that nature. And obviously it's arm strength. Obviously those are his strengths. Obviously when you look at his weaknesses, you have to look at, and also, he's got good mobility in the pocket, too. He can move back there as well. He won't be a statue sitting back there in the pocket as well. So he's definitely going to be he's probably the most talented. Outside of Lamar Jackson, he's probably the most talented of all of these guys. But for accuracy, and to me, that's the number one thing you want to look at the quarterback position. Does he have at least an NFL arm, and can he be accurate with the football? And that's got to be your biggest concern when you're looking at Josh Allen on film from an accuracy standpoint. He's not the best in that regard. And so that, to me, would be the biggest concern and the lack of competition, too. You know, from a strength of schedule, what he faced in college, playing at Wyoming. Obviously, we went through this with Carson Wentz, and he's proved everybody wrong.
Going to say that.
And, but, you know, that's you have to give that as a knock on him, too, the lack of competition. When you look at Sam Darnold, and in my opinion, he's still the one that has the most upside out of all of these quarterbacks. And you look at that early in the year, he was forcing the issue. He didn't have Juju Smith, wide receiver anymore. I think it took him a while to realize that. The year before, he forced some passes to Juju Smith, and Juju was able to go and get them. He didn't have that kind of weapon at the receiver position, and it took him a few games to realize that this past season. So the middle of the season, he looked really good this year. Then obviously he met Ohio State, and it was all, you know, went against some tough competition, couldn't take care of football in that game. And obviously that's still a lasting impression. But he's another guy that's got good mobility in the pocket. He's smart. And but, you know, you have to be worried about his weaknesses would be, you know, does he force the issue too much? You know, he's going to have to work on that, making the right decisions with the football and not be so turnover prone. But he has, to me, the most upside. We talked about Josh Rosen already, too. As far as polish, he's the most polished guy. As far as drop back passer, the way he delivers the football, the way he communicates and read defenses, he's probably the most polished out of all of these guys in that area. Extremely smart. Now, you know, the weakness is he's been injury prone. And also, does he care enough?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those are going to be the big question marks that he's going to have to prove. Is he really locked in to being a superstar quarterback in the National Football League? And Jim Marr is right. If he is, he has the potential to be. He's just as good as any of these guys, too. And so those are the two. Can he stay healthy? And is he going to be motivated? Is he going to be locked in 365 days a year or close to that for him to be successful at the quarterback position? You look at Baker Mayfield here. I mean, Baker Mayfield, you look at the weaknesses, his height, obviously, small hands, but he is very accurate with the football and he's tough as nails. And can he be a Drew Brees type player at the quarterback level? That's what some NFL scouts are hoping he turns into be. That kind of player, very accurate with the football, to be tough. And obviously, like I said, the biggest knock is, does he have the athleticism? And will his height, you know, hurt him at that level? So we'll have to see in regards to that. Lamar Jackson, is he a pocket passer? It's probably the number one weakness that that scouts want to see. But, you know, when you really look at it, you know, he was very accurate with the football this past season. You know, had a high completion percentage, and you always have that element to run as well. You know, I don't know how much stock do we put into these stupid tests that these players take. And, you know, obviously he did score the lowest on these wonderlink tests. But, you know, I don't put too much stock into that. You know, it's just a matter of the NFL teams put that. But I think the biggest question mark is, you know, can he drop back and be a pure pocket passer? But from my standpoint, I think he was fairly accurate this past season and probably his best season as far as throwing the football accurately as well. I think he had a better year this year than the Heisman year.
Right.
When you really study his film and really look at his statistics and things of that nature, he really improved from his sophomore to his junior year. But I moved him all the way up to number 11. And last but not least, Mason Rudolph. The good thing about Mason Rudolph is I think from a versatility standpoint, he can play in the pro style, and even if you want to bring that shotgun spread type style that like the Saints even runs, I think he can play in both of those kind of offenses. And so I think he has that versatility from what he was playing in at Oklahoma State. And I think from that regard, he could be real steel in this draft as well. You know, the knock on him is some of his decision-making as well, and does he have an NFL arm? But I think from an accuracy standpoint, he's got the size, too, to take some licks. But I think from a coaching standpoint, he's got just as good as offensive coaching as any of these